Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about Sir Isaac Newton read from a coffee table book called The Great Scientists, and the coffee table book is really written by, I suppose, science communicator dilettantes who love themselves and love seeing themselves in sort of historic garb, so they sort of interpret people as heroic science communicators, embryonic science communicators, wrestling against history, and then the final page of history turns and there they are. So it's about them and other things. We're going up to Sir Isaac Newton, which let's say is a bit of a sad character, and I don't think they'll have this story in it, but he was rejected by his mum, teased by students at school for being rejected, and then snapped, and he wanted to show them, and he had this fire and passion, wanting a relationship, finally had a relationship with a male Swiss mathematician who abandoned him, you know, exited him, and the fire of science died, and then he spent his life at the end being a head of the London Mint, involved in politics and leasing his niece for sexual favours, all this type of stuff, trying to actually understand him and to understand the sheer torment of expressing scientific ideas without maths. So if there's no mathematical equations in Principalia, it's conjugation, and so the books have to be read very, very slowly to get across, and there's lots of almost action scenes where he is at war with Descartes. He himself is distinguishing himself, and the English imperialism extended to the English imperialism of science, the taking over. There was sort of seeds of scientific method there, but yeah, so England had to beat the French in the 30 Years' War, where the French lost basically their control of the planet and it went over to England. And so when they lost that, they, part of the English conquest is the supposition of their scientists over the top of French scientists. And when they picked Newton, they picked someone who believed not in genuine science. He was Enlightenment science, but he actually believed in religion. He believed sort of something slightly to the left of the Enlightenment, of the idea of that I can understand things. He believed that still God, you can actually perceive God. Sort of that you've got Kant, various people going forward, rationalists, who are looking at their perception of God. So if they're looking at their perception of God, they're rationalists. So he thinks it's really interesting to go through. So I'm going to read this in full knowledge that it's not going to be as good as, say, the detailed bibliographies which revealed Isaac Newton under three different lights. By universal consent, it even makes me vomit. Isaac Newton was the greatest scientist of all time. He was most famous for discovering gravity and for his three great laws of motion, which underpin all modern physics. Well, he himself did not say, I've discovered these laws. These laws are already known. Let me articulate them, he says in Principalia. So if Newton is the greatest and he says he didn't do something, who are we to actually say something? But he also created the mathematics of calculus, unlocked the secrets of coloured light, and much more besides. Okay, well, he also invented the cat flap, which I suppose is a supposed thing. Discovering gravity is because he was a mystic, and gravity could be a mystic force. In the concrete, he was, you know, a throwback. Similar to a lot of the people like Copernicus was a throwback to, he was ultra Aristotelian. He wasn't anti Ptolemy, he was ultra-Aristotelian. And what does epicycles mean? So a lot of these things, a lot of these ideas were... These people weren't against the ancients. They had an insight into the ancients, which sort of elevated them above what's going home. We take Newton's views on the way things move so much for granted nowadays that it's hard to imagine just how revolutionary they were in Newton's day and just what extraordinary breakthroughs they were. And not that we take them to granted, they are so old in the English language that, you know, an attack, a political campaign has momentum, loses momentum, centre of mass. All the words of Newtonian stuff which he invented to pull out, so his equations, he invented the word force, kinetic energy, all these things. It was part of his invention. So we sort of say, and he discovered this, and sort of rather circular thing, because we say he discovered the word. He discovered the principle behind the word. No, he... Yes, but the word has now become of the principle. It's gone into the English language. It's hard to describe. Before Newton, there had been no notion of movement of fish in the sea or papers disturbed by a breeze had any in common whatsoever with the movement of the heavens, let alone were they predictable in any way. I think, no, I really don't think so. I mean, if you look at all the Renaissance ballistics, there was a believing that although we can't predict things, we can predict a bullet. It's a major aspect of it. It is predictable, explicable in a way, I think might be the story. They're all controlled by unique local factors, or else by the whims of gods. The universe is essentially a mysterious, capricious place. And, of course, that's what Newton believed. He believed he was uncovering what God's whim was. God was acting in a mathematically definable whim. The other thing is that motion, impulse, the entire idea is of an impulse given to something. The idea of impulse is a more fundamental thing, and Newton dealt more with momentum than mass, and a lot of his definitions of mass were sort of circular. He said mass is what you get when you look at the density of something and divide it by a volume or something. Like he really didn't get into it. But the idea of impulse is the idea of spiritual push. You know, spirits can do so much push. So impulse and momentum is that connection with the spirit world. And really, in a certain sense, the understanding of angular momentum is so intensely spiritual. As you go through. With his law of gravity and three laws of motion, Newton showed every movement, large or small, on the ground or the first reaches of space behaves according to that simple universal laws. He did have a universal laws. That's just an absolute abhorrent. So if you read that sentence to a kid and first read it, you condemn that kid to a lifetime of ignorance. Thank you very much. His book, Philosophiae Naturalis Principia Mathematica, the mathematical principles of natural philosophy, which essentially is that the natural philosophy, the philosophy of the natural world, has mathematical principles. The greatest science book ever written was suddenly blew away the universe's chaotic mystery and showed that everything else behaves in an orderly, entirely understandable way. Wow. What's beautiful is that there's poems at the start of the book. It's beautiful. And illustrations. It was the whole universe have been revealed at last at some great, incredibly complex clock machine. And Newton's laws were the key to its working. Incredibly, it was shown that the laws worked out with experiments in laboratories on the ground can be applied right across the universe, which is that fundamental assumption. That is really a fundamental assumption, that if I look at a star, interpret it, there's no way that I can actually go across and actually verify the magnetic field. At the end of the day, it's that plus the universal principle. And I think that was in Locke. Even more significantly, the Principia show that every single movement in the universe can be analysed mathematically, and Newton provided the mathematical tools to do it. And with two branches of mathematics, he created differential calculus and integral calculus. or differential equation. It is interesting that, say, communism, for which thousands of people have died and suffered, has problems with differential calculus. Armed with Newton's laws and Newton's mathematics, it became possible not just to work out what was going in any movement, from the lifting of a coffee cup to the orbit of a planet, but to predict what would happen, for instance, when a train goes across a new bridge or when a spacecraft is launched. Newton made it possible, in theory, to predict the movement of everything in the universe forever, from the greatest star to the tiniest molecule. Well, it showed... well, obviously, there's two comments you've got on that. That is quantum mechanics about the stochastic undetermined nature of things, but also chaos theory, that's from, given the laws of Newton, leads to chaos. That is, when you write down 1 as opposed to 1.0, it's the infinitely fine-tuning of his equations. This makes me vomit, unfortunately. No wonder when Newton's ideas began to be widely understood, he began to be regarded in awe in the 18th century. His revelation, the universe behaves according to predictable universal laws, ushered in a new optimistic age, the age of enlightenment, in which people believe humankind can learn, understand, and improve the world, which is the enlightenment. But he actually didn't... He fed into the enlightenment, but he had one foot clearly in the mystic and the unenlightenment. I don't think that's why he was famous. I just think people, it's just like Hawking, it's just celebrity and Britain and coffee houses and the nature of things and the way that people were beginning to move with the king and around the king. As the poet Alexander Pope said in his famous satirical verse, "Nature and nature's laws laid hid in night. God said, let Newton be, and all was light." Oh, God. If the optimism seems clouded today, it's only by doubts that we will do the right thing, not that things are ultimately beyond the understanding of the way Newton initiated. There's this theory of knowledge that it's never complete. Gesche, I can't remember the name. I just find this sick-inducing. Newton, and if Einstein's discoveries have shown a subtler, deeper insight as to how the universal laws work at extremes, Newton's laws underpins our basic understanding of how things work in the everyday scale. That also upsets me, because you've got everyday examples of special relativity, and that is your electric motor, your Tesla car, is driven by frame dependent. The way that a current can produce a force at a distance similar to gravity is due to length contraction, and so this and things like the coinage metals, where the D shell gives up a electron for, or the S shell gives up to complete the D shell, giving you coinage metals of copper, silver, and gold, is all examples. And look, that is just such a load of bollocks. The young genius. Okay, this is just vomit. Isaac Newton was born on Christmas Day in 1642. In a small manor house in the Lincolnshire village of Woolsthorpe. So Woolsthorpe has Sir Isaac Newton Shopping Centre. So that's a bit of equivalent to Blackstone Shopping Centre. It's got a tavern, a supermarket, Isaac Newton. He was a premature, so little they could fit him in a quart pot. And so sickly, he was not expected to survive. In fact, he proved remarkably healthy and lived for 84 years. His father had already died by the time Newton was born. He was just 18 months old. His poor widow mother married a wealthy old local minister in the nearby North Witham, but left the infant Isaac in the care of his grandparents. So, it's just, you know, what do you do? It's just, this is this entire nurture and nature, you know, what happens If you nurture children, they all go up to a pretty even stuff. If you don't do them, some can become, well, some become psychopaths. And I think he was a psychopathic scientist. It may be that Newton never recovered from his early abandonment. Like, what's the... bloody oath. He never did. I mean, he punched the lights out of people at school. Even though his mother returned home to her son when her new husband died 7 years later, Isaac confessed that he remembered threatening my stepfather and mother to burn them with their house over them. Throughout his life, Newton carried a terrible suppressed anger and sense of resentment that made him a very difficult man to deal with. He was sent off. And he was sent to be a farmer. He agreed. He was such a dreadful farmer, they sent him in there. The introverted Isaac went to school at age 12, but showed no signs of any intellectual prowess until he was bullied one day at school. In a towering rage, young Newton fought back until his angered, his larger opponent was a quivering wreck. Now, this is an important thing. The bullied at school is an important thing, but Newton did not stop there. He was determined to humiliate his opponent in the classroom too. Soon Newton became deeply involved in academic pursuits, especially science, amazed the locals with such things as handmade water clocks, flying lanterns, which he did. He also had a windmill and a mouse, Miss Miller Mouse. He dressed up in clothes. Completely, I would say, slightly autistic. However, this idea of punching the lights out of this person and saying, giving this entire focus. And what I really think, about geniuses, so I've known a few geniuses and certain aspects, your brain is not a single brain, it's actually a community of brains working on things. Some will be allocated here, some will be there. If you're not used, you'll only use one brain, and the other couple of brains will be for entertainment. But if you're threatened, it's time together, and you get organised. So I sort of understand how he got organised internally. I can't explain it. Recognising the boy's talents, Newton's teacher, John Stokes, and his uncle, William Ascough, encouraged him to try out for Cambridge. It was accepted a place in there in 1661, a couple of years before the Great Fire, but the point is that that's actually not true. They tried to get him to get on the land, and he made such a bolts of it. They said, "I'll go to thing." By this time Newton was so concerned to follow up his own research that he barely bothered with coursework, and was almost failed. Unknown to his tutor, though, he was already going far beyond them, developing the latest revolutionary mathematical and scientific ideas of the French genius René Descartes, which were only just beginning to filter in England. He was, but he was convinced they were wrong, and René Descartes had his three laws of motion. So René Descartes said it was three laws of motion, but he had his third law had angular momentum in it. And the idea of twists and his magnetic fields was incredibly rich and beautiful vortexes. René Descartes was heading along the line of Einstein. Newton was a step backwards. René Descartes was just this most beautiful. But you can imagine that René Descartes was such a powerful mind, such a powerful philosopher. He couldn't. He held too much. And he connected it all together in this one beautiful view. He had principles. René Descartes was an Enlightenment character. Newton was a backwater, pod thing. Miraculousy, which is, there is miraculousies. One is, for Einstein had a miraculously in 1905. This is 1665, just the year before the fire of London. I think there's plague and all that type of stuff going around Britain. So you've got people abandoning people, plague, abused poor, wars going on, press gang people, just the most insane same world happening. In August 1665, plague struck right across southern England. Cambridge was effectively closed, and Newton was forced to return to Woolshope. There he remained for a year, which is the plague coronavirus. This enforced retirement turned out to be a truly astonishing year. In the peace and quiet of the Lincolnshire home, Newton developed his works on Descartes to create a mathematical calculus, which now studies how fast things change and an essential understanding of acceleration, the way forces work. But his discovery of force equals ma, was measurable, mass was a concept, which then got you the concept of force. So his force is something which causes something to accelerate. He created the words and the concept at the time. It was like a co-creation of the maths and the concept. And now we teach for, we do the concept and then go to, it was a synthesis together of the two things. And it is calculus, which Newton called his method of fluxons, took Archimedes' brilliant way of using polygons and rectangles to work out areas and circles and curves, and pushed it one giant step forward to show how a tangent of a slope at any point of a curve graph can be analysed, such as one showing a time against distance travelled that way. The speed and acceleration at any given point can be analysed. And this is this beautiful, beautiful thing of concept of time. One of the things is that your time can shrink to zero, to an instant in time, and we still cannot really grasp infinitesimal 0.01 of a tick. It's the most beautiful, beautiful thing. Now, what's happening here is that these cockatoos. So self-crested cockatoos are going around the place. They've had their tree cut down and they're just pissed off. It's quite amazing to watch them. Okay, continuing. Newton's greatest... But the other thing is that Leibniz, who discovered calculus, he also discovered calculus. Leibniz also discovered the digital realm. Again, we want to give that to Bill Gates. Well, we want to give it to the Americans, but it was a German philosopher at this time who... wanted to follow the new king, German king, to England, and Newton said, "Fuck off." He's not an asshole to just Hooke. He's also an asshole to Leibniz. He's just such a wanker. Newton's greatest discovery, laws of gravity, and the laws of motion. He added a third while at Stourbridge Market, he picked up a pair of glass prisms and began to research the nature of glass and colours. And can I say, my dad gave me some prisms, and I really want to give prisms to your kids. Sort of, my dad gave me batteries and wires, and I just enjoyed them, and they filled my life. But nowadays, everyone has bionicles and Lego and shit. The prism for me was a beautiful thing. I really connected to it, and I became a molecular spectroscopist. By using prisms to split daylight into colours of the rainbow, and then using another to recombine them into white light, he showed that light is made up of a rainbow's colours. Remarkably, all his scientific discoveries during his time at Woolthorpe, this was only one revealed when he returned to Cambridge the following year. It was enough, though, to earn him a post as the assistant professor of mathematics in 1669. Remember, there's a great fire of London, plague. Newton remained secretive all his life, writing reams of research findings, but only showing them when challenged or when someone seemed about to come up with the same conclusion, which is your Renaissance aggressive world championship fighter, sort of caveman fighter. There was no institutions to publish and draw things out coming along. He's also Maynard Keynes collected his works and read through them and said he's the last great magician. He was a magic warlock. And this is someone who intensely studied Newton, John Maynard Keynes, pretty amazing. I'll say something else, which we get through. The turbulent scientist. His secrecy was caused him tremendous problems in the future. It took him 30 years to publish his work on calculus, for instance. The intervening period, the German philosopher Leibniz had published his own independently discovered version and given it the name of calculus, which stuck. And now, and the row of who got there first became bitter. The Royal Society held an inquiry to sort out the mess. Newton hijacked the committee's report to ensure it found it in his favour, which would have done anyway. Even so, Newton's furious tirades against Leibniz went on even further after the German philosopher's death. This was a CEO bully asshole. Someone who, if you can imagine, we can sort of forgive him for being an asshole because he's a genius, but there are heaps of assholes out there who aren't geniuses, who just... What did it achieve? What in history did it achieve? Nothing. Our understanding of calculus has not improved one little bit by Newton and Leibniz fighting each other. And the English had enormous power at this stage, and so Newton, the madness of Newton, it's sort of like using Newton, Trump's racism to justify crushing another country. It's sort of like, oh, I don't know, it's really bad. Similarly, he was only stung into publishing his ideas on gravity and motion when his only serious scientific rival in England, Robert Hooke, claimed in 1684 that he had solved the planetary motion problems with the universe square law that governed the way planets moved. That's an incorrect statement. It was far more cooperative. Hooke was right about the universe square law, but he had no notion of why it worked, or even how to prove it. It was his determination to put Hooke in his place that Newton realised that his idea of gravity and the laws of motion, which had so far only been applied to the Earth, might work as well to the heavens too. There is that, there's the Richter's pendulum, which is important. I really have to look at this, that pendulum. I wish I could get to it. So a pendulum, someone took a pendulum, sexual pendulum from Paris to the West Indies, and it began to not work. So that really uncovered it. He sat down to work on his masterpiece, The Principalia, which he finished 30 months later. There's the great... What's the name of his dog? His dog burnt his papers. Was it called Spot? Oh, his dog burnt his papers, and he came in and forgave his dog. Oh, what was the name of his dog? Oh, God, that hurts me. By this time, Newton was already famous for a remarkable telescope he had made in 1688. Gave it to James I after the Restoration. The telescope had lenses were already developing and getting quite big in Newton's day. The problem was, the bigger they got, the more they suffered from distorted colour images as the light rays were bent through the glass of the lens. Newton solved the problem by swapping the lenses for curved mirrors, so the rays of light did not have to pass through glass, but simply reflected off it. Oh, off the mirrors. It doubled back on itself, making the telescope much more compact. The Newtonian telescope, it would be just 15 centimetres, yet it's powerful as a lens telescope a metre long, and avoided all the problems of colour fringing. Newton's fame. Oh, what was the name of Newton's dog? Very famous dog incident. So there's Miller Mouse, Newton's dog, and his cat. All these things, and cows, and all this beautiful thing. Newton. It was the invention of the telescope that got Newton elected to the prestigious Royal Society, because he showed it to Charles, whatever it is, or James, and he said, whoa. The leading scientific society in Europe and the gathering place for all the finest minds in Britain. Was it? I wonder whether the French Academy was the top. But Almost as soon as he had been elected, he resigned after a bitter row with Robert Hooke over papers that Newton wrote detailing his work with prisms, and Hooke wrongly criticised. Newton vowed never to return to the society while Hooke was there. It was only when Hooke died in 1703 that Newton returned as president, and he remained there until he died in 1723. The Principalia, published in 1687, caused a sensation and made Newton internationally famous. Indeed, he was the first scientific superstar. That is true. He became elected as an MP of Cambridge and then became to London to do his sitting in Parliament. He found himself feted by everyone from the King to the great philosopher John Locke and surrounded by young acolytes. One of those acolytes was a gifted young Swiss mathematician called Fatio de Dulia. Yeah, it's a Swiss Dulia. I'm really in love with it. The 48-year-old Newton is said to have fallen in love with Fatio. I would say he fell in love with Fatio. When Fatio left for Switzerland 3 years later, Newton was distraught. There's no way of knowing if this is merely coincidence, but it's the time Newton never embarked on any more scientific work. And for a while, he became increasingly reclusive, concentrating on alchemy research, see box, that he regarded, if anything, as more important than his scientific research. Final years. In 1696, Newton was invited to join the Royal Mint. The official story was he was receiving a reward for his intellectual achievements. The famous French philosopher Voltaire believed it was simply because he had a pretty niece married to the right person. That's actually perhaps not correct. He had a pretty niece who was a rent whore. Whatever the truth, Newton, it's interesting that Voltaire believed that. Whatever the truth, Newton embarked on his job with fanatical zeal, determined to stamp out counterfeiting of coins and undermining England's currency. And this is why you've got those little slots on the sides of coins to do it. But he also hung people. He also put people to death. He was just a complete nutcase. Newton remained at the post of Master of the Mint for the rest of his life. After Hooke died, Newton combined it with the post of President of the Royal Society, a task that he pursued with the same vigour, although he was now in his 60s. Newton died on the 20th of March, 1723. When he was buried, with a grand funeral at Westminster Abbey, attended by all the great dignitaries of the day, huge crowds came to watch passers. Voltaire was visiting London at the time and wrote, "England honours the mathematician as other nations honours kings who have done well by his subjects." It was true. Isn't that beautiful? I've got to remember the name of the dog. Gee whiz. Look, I'll read Newton the Alchemist. Isaac Newton is generally considered the first great modern scientist. And his book, Principalia, well, you know what? I think he is an ancient scientist who has stumbled into the Enlightenment with his mysticism, has just unlocked all these things. And his book, Principalia, as the first of the most important scientific achievements of the last 350 years. It was a product of science that prides itself on observation, experiment, and pragmatic, honest logic. Just make me vomit. I don't know how you could say that. Yet in the same way, he was also the last great magician of the medieval age. And that's what Cain said. He spent more than half his life avidly researching alchemy and astrology, spending day after day, night after night, secretly working in his laboratory, trying to turn the base metal into gold, or scanning the ancient texts for insights. This work is more important to him than ever than his science. He was not content with the discoveries of the workings of the physical world, but wanted to discover as well the mechanics of human life. Most of his notes on the subject was destroyed in a fire, started by his dog Diamond. Well, that's absolutely incorrect, but the dog's name Diamond. I'm trying to remember. I was thinking Spot, Dot, Diamond. So only a fraction of his large volume of research survives, much is now completely unintelligible to us. Although we are apt to dismiss all the work as a peculiar mumbo-jumbo not worthy of such a fine mind, it was, acceptance of the possibility that there was a mysterious forces in the world that led him to the discovery of the invisible gravitational force. That's what I really wanted to say. That is, that he was so out of it that he could make a leap that people who were more connected couldn't do. It's absolutely, I am so grateful this big tree has gone, and it's sort of chilling. This tree's gone, the sun is coming through, but we have a few, we've got, I don't know, probably 15 great trees on our property, so it's pulling it down. Something more rationally minded Galileo had not been able to accept. What on earth does that mean? I think that's complete hodgepodge, completely. But that's a beautiful thing. It's Dog Diamond. His Dog Diamond only destroyed a few assignments. And he forgave it. I forgive you, my dog. Thanks a lot for listening. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.